This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program today. As you longtime watchers and listeners to this program know, Greg Palast is one of our regulars and one of the people that I have so much respect for, a brilliant journalist, author, filmmaker. His new movie, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, is available all over the place, Amazon and whatnot. GregPalast.com for all the information. And there's an extraordinary event going on that involves Kris Kobach that I want to get Greg on to talk about. First, just a one-minute clip from his movie, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Here it is.
This guy, Kris Kobach. Wow. Harvard, Yale, Oxford. Republican whiz kid. He's already become a Fox News national hero for saving America from an invasion of alien voters.
Those dangerous aliens, dreamer aliens, alien votes.
Republicans claim millions of aliens voted in our elections.
12 million illegal aliens in the USA who could vote without proper identification.
They're bringing drugs.
Hundreds of illegals not supposed to be in the country, but registered to vote.
They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
Kobach has ruled that voters must prove that they are Americans to vote. But he was blocked by a lawsuit filed by a group of ladies he exposed as a communist front, as he calls them, the Communist League of Women Voters.
The Communist League of Women Voters. Greg Palast, welcome back to the program, my friend.
I kid you not, Kris Kobach, in fact, reporters were taken aback, like, whoa. And he said, that's right, the Communist League of Women Voters. But the Communist League of Women Voters is in the courtroom today with what is absolutely the most important voting rights case in America at this moment. The state of Kansas. Kris Kobach, by the way, is defending himself and the state of Kansas personally in the courtroom. Not much trial experience, and the judge is trying to school him on how you act in a courtroom. But basically, the state of Kansas, in a law written by Kobach, requires everyone registering to vote to prove you're a citizen. Now, you might say, well, that's reasonable, but we've gone 2.5 centuries in America without such a requirement. You have to sign a form saying, under penalty of perjury, you go to jail, then you get deported if you're not a citizen and you try to vote. So people don't do that. But Kobach has now said you have to prove your citizenship. No, not a driver's license, Tom. Aliens have those. Not a social security number. Aliens have those. You have to have your original birth certificate or a passport. And, you know, so guess who doesn't get to register? 1 in 7 Kansans. 1 in 7 Kansans who tried to register to vote in the last 3 years have been blocked by Kobach's law. And he has not been able to prove that a single one of the people he's blocked, because they couldn't prove their citizenship, are non-citizens. And many of them are plaintiffs in this suit, which is being argued by the ACLU for the League of Women Voters and for the plaintiffs. You got two Air Force officers who are blocked from voting. You have yesterday they heard from one of the plaintiff witnesses, a woman who works in a prison, in the prison cafeteria, and Kobach said, well, why didn't you use your cell phone to call our office to get a special hearing to explain to us why you couldn't get your birth certificate? And she says, you know, well, Mr. Kobach, you should know that if you work in a prison, you can't bring in your cell phone. You know, and he said, well, why didn't you take a break, go into your car, call our offices and arrange for a special hearing? This is what you have to do to vote. If you're, you know, and who doesn't have their birth certificates? People who are born at home, poor people. Students don't necessarily have their original birth certificate with them. They're the main group that has been excluded, young people. 57% of the people excluded are between the ages of 18 and 25. So it's almost all brand new voters. How do they vote, by the way? Ask yourself. This is a clear partisan grab. Kobach knows it. But if he wins, the Democrats can kiss 18 and 20 elections goodbye. One in seven new voters are blocked from registering. Can you imagine the effect?
In the state of Kansas, by the Secretary of State Chris Kobach, who has been collaborating with Donald Trump. He's the guy, apparently the guy who told Trump that 3 million illegal aliens, his phrase, voted for Hillary Clinton in the last election.
Yeah. By the way, Kobach did call me. Yeah, Kobach did call me, and he said, yeah, he's the guy that came up with the 3 million number. 3 million aliens. He found one. He claims to have found one. Now he's going to court and said, well, he's the only Secretary of State with the right to arrest people for fraudulent voting. So he's arrested one. He's been talking about this for a decade. He's arrested one that he claims is an alien voter. And yet he's blocked. He's removed 22,000 people from the voter rolls. 36,000 people are on what's called a suspension list, can't yet vote. If this, and he's not been able to find these voters, he keeps telling the court that there are thousands. Just because he arrested one doesn't mean that there aren't thousands, and that he's prevented 30,000 illegal aliens from registering to vote. Yet he has the power to arrest them. He hasn't arrested one. I heard him on Fox News. I even have a quote from him in my film where he says, 50 Somalians have registered to vote. They're stealing my vote. And, well, why don't you arrest them? They're Kansans, right. If that's true.
Right, yeah. How long is this trial going to last? What do we know about the judge? What's the likely outcome? How do we keep track of it? And why is the media completely ignoring this?
Oh, boy. Why does the media completely ignore the most important voting rights case in America? I guess that's why we watch Tom Hartman, is it right? And
okay.
Listen to Tom Hartman, okay? So that's how you get the information. And I'll be reporting continuously. The trial should last all week. I'll keep on top of it and the details. I've read all the testimony, expert witnesses, et cetera. I think at the trial level, Kobach, with his grandstanding, remember, he's running for governor. And there he is in the courtroom himself. He doesn't know, the judge said, you don't know evidence 101, like he's, like he's just hasn't even gone to law school. By the way, he's no fool. He did go to Harvard, Yale, and Oxford, but he has no trial experience.
He doesn't have a law degree, right?
Well, actually, he does. He was a law professor, but the thing is, he has no trial experience. And one of the things is that the judge was really upset. He says, "You don't understand the basic rules of evidence. You don't know how to cross-examine a witness." And so the judge is really angry. The judge has already said enjoined him already from implementing this law, which he's, by the way, violated the injunction. He stopped people from voting, even though the judge said, "Don't do that until we have a trial," which we're having now. The judge is angry. I think he's going to lose at this trial level. He's acting like a politician run amok. He's not running a trial. He's running a political campaign from the courtroom. The judge is not happy. The judge doesn't buy his, where are these mystery thousands and thousands of illegal voters? But we have physical voters in this courtroom who say they couldn't vote. Air Force officers,
right.
Mr. Kobach. And so but unfortunately, this is very much like the Indiana ID case.
That went to the Supreme Court, and they said that Indiana blocking people based on ID was just fine.
Fine. So what Kobach is playing for is the Trump Supreme Court.
Right.
He knows he's going to lose at this level.
Right.
What he's counting on is that the Trump Supreme Court is going to say, as they did with Republican majority did with ID laws, we don't care if you can't name one person, like in the case of ID, someone who's stolen someone's ID. They couldn't find a single case in 100 years in Indiana, yet the court said that was okay. They have found one single case of an alien voter in Kansas in a decade and removing tens of thousands of real voters. And I'm sorry, but I think it's going to be tough in front of the Supreme Court for the ACLU and the League of Women Voters. We have to stay on top of this. This is the biggest case. One in seven new voters nationwide. If this goes
it would wipe out the Democratic Party, which, of course, is what they're trying to do. Greg Palast, as soon as this trial's over, let us know what's going on, and feel free to call in anytime, please.
I will.
Okay, we'll keep track of this. GregPalast.com is his website.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And, of course, Greg's new movie, which features a lot of footage of Chris Kobach, is called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Let's see here. Grant in Ottawa, Canada. Hey, Grant, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's up?
I love your show. I listen to it a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, so yeah, I just wanted to talk about this trade issue. You know, Trump, I think he's trying to get something to get the people behind him. And this, obviously, a lot of people agree with the issue. But, you know, it's kind of tricky because there's a lot of things involved with this. Like, of course, we were talking earlier about, like, you know, labor, how labor, as you move companies outside, you know, you access the labor, and then the human rights violations become an issue and so on. And then it snowballs into a whole plethora of different issues, right? But yeah. Also, the thing, the main thing for me, the problem I see with this is that, like, if you look at how Trump is, you know, making the rich even richer, and it's turning a lot of people's stomachs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have to look at this on an international level, too. Like, if you look at the United States, you know, you have a little over 5.3% of the world population, and you accumulate well over half the world's wealth. So there's nothing wrong with being, you know, want to protect your industries and everything like that. But there comes a point.
I wonder what the number would be if you were to strip out the top 0.1%, the 0.01%, the billionaire class. You know, how much wealth America really has these days? Because it seems, if you look at the American middle class, that the wealth that was here in the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Has largely evaporated as a result of 40 years of Reaganomics.
Yes, yeah, good point. Yeah, I think
that's what's driving the rage about trade. And what people don't realize is that it's not just that simple. I mean, you can't just throw tariffs on or a VAT tax or something without strong unions, for example. You know, you could bring jobs back home, but GM is hiring at $14 an hour right now. They used to be paying $40 an hour. So, this is the death of unionization or the neutering of unions. So there's multiple pieces to it. But you're right. From the Canadian point of view, Grant, I mean, you live in Ottawa, and we have just a minute to the break here. How is your press and how are your politicians speaking of all this?
Well, they're basically they're holding firm and. Actually, when it comes to like certain areas in trade, a lot of areas, in fact, Canada feels as though we've been getting the short end of the stick because, like, again, you know, like population-wise, you're 10 times, and financially, I think it's close to 25 times.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine how we would get the upper hand all the time, like you know, ongoing issues like lumber and so on. Like, that's something that, you know, as an American, you can see it as being a problem. But as a Canadian, you know, of course, it's my side of the story.
Sure.
But really, when you look at it, like, it's really like we're getting a hard time a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But
is there a sense that NAFTA has not helped Canada either?
Well, yes, we have the same issues. Like our companies are are just as guilty as American companies for, you know, like abusing labor laws, labor rights, and so on by outsourcing.
Yeah.
We're pretty much in the same situation. Yeah.
That's very interesting. Grant, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for watching us there in Ottawa, Canada. We appreciate it. We'll be right back. It's coming up on 20 minutes past the hour. We had a poll over on YouTube yesterday. The question was, North and South Korea are due to meet for a high-level summit. Will the U.S. back off from its rhetoric to allow talks? 9% said yes, Trump will take a step back to help the world. 91% said no, Trump will verbally attack North Korea during the talks. Some of the comments, Edward Norton said, lock out Trump from the peace discussions. American Weapons said, everyone needs to stand behind President Trump. The bashing has gone way too long. Funny how North Korea became an issue once President Trump took office, makes you wonder. Janet Baker said, you should actually have a third option that says, who the hell knows what that man's going to do? Because I really just don't know. I just picked this as the most likely option. Yeah, well said. And our geeky science for the day. This is an amazing story. This is out of the University of Colorado at Boulder. And there was a scientist who his name was Goldstein, Pavel or Pavel, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, P-A-V-E-L Goldstein. And his wife gave birth to their child, their daughter. And while she was in pain, in the pain of childbirth, whenever he held her hand, she reported to him that she felt less pain. He initially thought, well, maybe that's just psychosomatic. But he runs a lab there at the university. And so he said, let's check this out. It was published this week in a peer-reviewed journal, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And what they found was that if you reach for the hand, if you hold the hand of a loved one in pain, not only will your breathing and heart rate synchronize with theirs, your brain wave patterns will couple up too. Plus, their pain goes down and your pain does not go up. So this is the latest in a growing body of research exploring a phenomenon known as interpersonal synchronization, in which people physiologically mirror the people they were with. Only this was the first one that actually looked at brainwave patterns as well as reports on pain. And they did it in the lab. They got 22 couples, ages 23 to 32, put EEG caps on their brains to measure brainwave activity. And they tried them not touching, sitting together, holding hands, and sitting in separate rooms. That was their baseline. And then they repeated the scenario with the woman in each couple. These were all straight couples. The woman in each couple having mild heat pain on her arm. So she was experiencing pain. And merely being in each other's presence, with or without touch, was associated with some brainwave synchronicity in the alpha mu band, a wavelength associated with focused attention, they write. But if they held hands while she was in pain, the coupling increased the most. Researchers also found that when she was in pain and he couldn't touch her, the coupling of their brainwaves diminished. He said, it appears that pain totally interrupts this interpersonal synchronization between couples, and touch brings the synchronization back. Interpersonal touch may blur the borders between self and others. It's so important, you know, that from affectionate touches to getting a massage. I mean, the physical touch is a really, really important thing. I mentioned the school attack in the Netherlands when Congressman Pocan was on. The lesson of this, I guess, this guy ran into a school in Holland with two knives intent on killing kids, and the kids beat him up with their backpacks full of heavy school books. And the lesson, of course, is never bring a knife to a backpack fight. But, you know, in Holland, they don't worry about mass shooters because they don't have guns like we do. Another piece of information here, LendEDU, which is a company that lends money to students or helps people refinance student loans. So they've got a dog in the fight, as it were, and, you know, a commercial one at that. Nonetheless, they did a survey that I think is worth noting. The key statistics, 53% of senior citizens believe it is more difficult to become financially sound now if you were a 20-something than it was for them in their 20s. And I guess as a senior citizen, I can certainly attest to that. I believe that to be the case. The world, you know, in the 60s when I came of age, and the early 70s was a very easy place, you know, particularly with the white privilege that I carried, the middle class privilege as well. But I think even broadly right across the board, it was a friendlier place, economically better. A combined 79% of senior citizens are either much worried, very much worried, or slightly worried about the final financial health of their families, future generations. 48% of senior citizens think millennials will be less prepared for retirement than their generation. 30% of senior citizens believe Social Security will not exist for millennials. It goes through the list. So it's some interesting data points. I mentioned the 17 Democrats who CommonDreams.org writing about this, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, out speaking out against what we're referring to as the Bank Lobbyist Act. The 17 members of the Democratic caucus who voted in favor of this motion to proceed, who could still vote against it if we can successfully lobby them. Obviously, they're being lobbied by their bank donors. We need to be lobbying them, too. Are Bennett of Colorado, Carper of Delaware, Coons of Delaware, Donnelly of Indiana, Hassan of New Hampshire, Heitkamp of North Dakota, Jones of Alabama, Kane of Virginia, King of Maine, Manchin of West Virginia, McCaskill of Missouri, Nelson of Florida, Peters of Michigan, Shaheen of New Hampshire, Stabenow of Michigan, Tester of Montana, and Warner of Virginia. So you may want to contact them. The number for your members of Congress is 202-225-3121. We'll be back with your calls right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Your media support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Quite a day, a lot going on. The Kris Kobach trial is huge. I mean, this is a huge deal. And David Dennison is apparently having some, I don't know what you call it, problems. David Dennison is the name that is used to identify Donald Trump. And this is just fascinating. Anyhow, we'll get into all of that as we continue through the program. Right now, let's pick up some phone calls. Dawn in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Hey, Dawn, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call. Sure. I just want to talk about Ann Gillespie, who's running for state senate in Illinois in our District 27. That's the Arlington Heights, Mount Prospect, Rolling Meadows area. She is a just fantastic candidate with so much integrity and intelligence. She was a healthcare attorney. She worked as a general manager in a mail order pharmacy production, saved 500 jobs from going to Texas because she believed that we had the infrastructure, that we have the education in Illinois to keep those jobs here. She is fighting for health care that's going to be accessible to everyone. She is fighting to get rid of the flat tax in Illinois, which we are only one of eight states left, I think, in the union. Most states are the gradual income tax, and we need that because right now it's unsustainable to continue this way. We cannot, to protect our social safety nets and and the infrastructure. We need to switch from a flat tax to the gradual income tax, and we'll be much better on
progressive graduated
taxes.
Income tax. Yeah, excellent. Yes, great point, Ann. Is there a website that you wanted to let us know about?
Yes, there is. It's annforillinois.org, and the primary is March 20th. And for anybody who is in our area who thinks that they can support Ann, come on out and vote. Right now we have early voting, and she is just believed in
public
education and health care, and she's fantastic.
Yeah, I got it. Keep us up to date on this. I don't endorse primary candidates unless it's somebody I really know, and I don't know your district, and I don't know these people, so I can't, make an endorsement. But once the primary's over, we will want to get, whoever is winning whether it's Ann Gillespie or somebody else, whoever the candidate is, probably on the program. So keep us up to date, okay, Dawn?
So much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Great to hear from you. Norma in Woodridge, Illinois. Hey, Norma, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I listen to your program regularly.
Well, thank you. Thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
I just wanted to throw in a suggestion here, and that's instead of our legislators supporting the bank bill, they need to be supporting reparations for the gun victims.
Whoa. Yeah. That would that kind of shifts the focus to the victims, so they become the focus of the stories. And if we started hearing what kind of financial and personal hell these gun shooting victims are experiencing, those kind of stories I think would build more popular support for some sort of reasonable gun restrictions in the United States. That's an excellent suggestion, Norma. That is excellent suggestion. I will take that and run with it, if that's all right with you.
Certainly.
Okay. Thank you, Norma. Thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to us. Bart in Bellevue, Washington, listening on KBCS. Hey, Bart, what's up? Bart? Okay. Bart, you got to listen to your phone, not your radio. Tony in Georgetown, Kentucky. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind today? Tony? Another person not listening? Oh, my. Let's try Charlie in Phoenix, Arizona. Charlie, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So it's not me.
My question is,
okay,
why don't we focus on the people that take the money rather than give the money?
You're talking the politicians?
How is it, like you just talked to somebody that Ann was running for, how much money is she taking away? I mean, and why would you do that?
Why would who do what? Why would somebody take money from corporations, for example?
Or take the money from anybody?
Yeah.
I mean, why doesn't
then you have a nation of all politicians being rich
people.
Yeah,
you're going to say the only way to do it is spend money. That's not true.
Charlie, I would suggest if you believe that you try running for political office. Alan in Crown Point, Indiana. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind?
Yeah. Hi, Tom. I have a question. The stores that are refusing to sell guns for people, kids under 21.
Yeah, Walmart and Dick's.
Yeah. What do you think, if it's legal in the state for them to buy guns under 21, what do you think about that premise? And I have another part of a question based on your answer.
What premise?
Do you think it's right for stores to be able to refuse to sell guns for people under 21? When it's legal in the state.
Yeah. I'm guessing that is going to get litigated, and I'm not sure what the basis of the litigation would be. Because, for example, back in the 60s, when you had lunch counters in Alabama and Georgia who didn't want to seat black people, and Bobby Kennedy, as Attorney General, was trying to force them to, their argument was there's no law that says that we have to serve a particular class of people. There's no law that says that we have to, at least no state law, that we have to sell all products to all people. And Bobby Kennedy came in with the Interstate Commerce Clause, which is part of the Constitution, saying that because you're engaged in interstate commerce, you are covered by federal law, the federal laws that regulate commerce, and serving people at a lunch counter is commerce. And they were like, we don't engage in interstate commerce. We don't sell things across state lines. And Bobby Kennedy was like, yes, you do. You're serving Heinz ketchup at your counter. You're serving Wonder Bread. You know, Heinz ketchup is made in Pennsylvania. Wonder Bread is made in Michigan. You're in Alabama. That's interstate commerce. And that's how he nailed them. And but I don't see a parallel, you know, construction, legal construction that could be used to say that, hey, I'm 18. I have the legal right in, fill in the blank, in Florida to buy an assault weapon, and Walmart refuses to sell it to me, so I'm going to sue them. I'm not sure I see what the legal basis of that would be, Alan.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Mark in Desert Hot Springs, California. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. It's Bob, not Mark.
Oh, Bob. I'm sorry. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, no problem. I just want to congratulate you for the awareness that you bring to America. I mean, that's pretty obvious.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. And I just wanted to ask you if you thought President Obama could have done more to get his nominee on the Supreme Court. If my memory serves me correct, he had 2 years left. And that's a big thing because it's a lifetime position.
Yeah.
And it just seemed to me that he didn't fight hard enough for that. What's your feeling on that?
It wasn't 2 years. It was a little less than 1 year. And that was Mitch McConnell's sales pitch, was that because it was less than 1 year, it should be considered an issue in the election and the people should decide. This was total BS and everybody knew it. What Mitch McConnell did was unprecedented. It had never been done before. It was a crime against our democracy. And my disappointment, I guess, would be the strongest word I'd use on this. President Obama didn't, call him out every single day and absolutely raise hell about it. Now, that said, President Obama had, it's like, he wore a tan suit one day. And all hell descended upon him for being too informal as the president. He saluted one of the guys getting into Air Force One with a cup of coffee in his hand, and all hell came down on him. I mean, as our first black president and as a Democrat, both the press, particularly the Republicans who largely control the press and constantly appear on the press, and the giant right wing echo machine from Fox so-called news, billionaire owned Fox News to billionaire supported right wing hate radio, they just went after him on everything he did. And so he had, I think perhaps as a result of that, was maintaining a somewhat low profile. I understand it, but I don't agree with it. And so that's my take on it. I wish he had fought harder. And what's so ironic is that Merrick Garland, the guy that he nominated, when this slot became open, he went to Orrin Hatch, who is, you know, the Mormon Republican conservative from Utah, a senator, been a senator for forever. He's one of the oldest, longest serving members of the Senate right now. He went to Orrin Hatch and said, can you give me the name of a candidate that you and I can agree on for the Supreme Court? Somebody that a Republican, a conservative Republican, and not just yourself, but your colleagues, talk to your friends and colleagues in the Senate and bring me a name, and I will nominate that person. And Orrin Hatch came back to Obama and said, Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland is a great trial lawyer, trial judge. He has a right down the middle record. He's not a Democrat or a liberal. He's not a right-wing Republican or a conservative. He's a down-the-middle solid guy. And so on Orrin Hatch's suggestion and implicit promise that the Republicans would support the nomination, Obama went with this middle-of-the-road guy, kind of an Anthony Kennedy guy, rather than, you know, another Sotomayor or Kagan.
Sure.
And Mitch McConnell, in the face of that, screwed him and all of us. So, you know, I think that there was plenty of raw material there to generate, you know, howling presidential outrage. And, you know, the media dropped the ball on this terribly, but in large part, the media is reactive, not proactive. And the White House could have driven it harder. And we're seeing that right now. When Trump wants something, he gets it. He goes for it. He goes on TV, makes it happen. Whether it's a good thing or not is a whole other discussion. But that would have been. I think he should have fought for Merrick Garland.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
That said, a lot of the hell that President Obama experienced as president was the direct result of Donald Trump's racist birther shtick. We'll be back. And welcome back. Bart in Bellevue, Washington, listening on KBCS. You want to try it again?
Yeah, hi, this is Bart.
Hey, Bart, what's up?
Well, just something completely a little different from the dialogue all morning long, but picking up on that little story you had about the holding of the hands in the operating room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the premise is people feel untethered, is that the right word, when they're in restlessness and also in pain.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how many of, of your listeners who are, like, waking up in the middle of the night, they can't fall back to sleep again or something like that. And then they put the radio on the TV, and it takes their mind off what's spinning around in their head. And then they become relaxed, and they fall asleep.
Right. Yeah, I do that. I listen to the BBC to put myself back to sleep, the BBC podcasts, something about a droning voice with a beautiful British accent just
exactly.
Kind of calms me down and puts me to sleep. But I also, you know, I also will reach over and just put my hand on Louise or curl around her, and that puts me back to sleep. I think that this research is really actually very important stuff. That and it's why it's so important that, you know, we try to touch each other every day. I mean, you know, in appropriate context, of course.
Right.
But it's kind of unfortunate that the whole, you know, the male predator thing, the whole Harvey Weinstein thing, has caused people to reach the point where, you know, they're reluctant to even, you know, give somebody a pat on the back or, you know,
exactly.
Walk by and put your hand on their shoulder and, hey, how are you? And, you know, and I understand, you know, if we're talking about a male boss and, you know, a female underling or something, that's not appropriate. I'm not saying it should be done, but it's like there's almost a spookiness. It's like we're getting afraid to touch each other,
therapeutic. Excuse me for interrupting, but I'm saying that I had an uncle when I was a kid. All the nephews and the cousins, we would go visit him, and his first inclination was to give you a pinch on the cheek,
mm-hmm.
and that was an affectionate gesture.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And nothing wrong with it. And that's something that it turns out is therapeutic and helpful. Bart, thanks for the call. It's nice to hear from you. Susan in McAlpin, Florida. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to offer an alternative for some people. They offer a passport card for $30. It's good for 10 years. You still have to have some documentation, of course, to get it.
Right.
But it might be an alternative for some people who haven't been able to get a driver's
license. But why should we have to do any of this when swearing on, at the risk of going to prison for 2 years, swearing under oath that you are a citizen, has worked for us for 240 years?
I understand.
Yeah.
And I
And that $30, I think, is a poll
with,
tax.
With your premise.
Yeah.
It was just an alternative.
Yeah, it is. But you're still going to have to get the birth certificate and pay for the certified copy and all that kind of stuff, you know, the original copy, blah, blah, blah. And you know, I've gone through that when I've had to, you know, I went through it the first time I had to get my passport back in the 70s, and I had no idea. My parents didn't have my birth certificate. I didn't know, you know, I had to jump through all kinds of hoops to get it. And you know, fortunately, I was born in a hospital. I mean, for people who are home, born at home or whatever, it could be even more problematic. Susan, thank you for the call. Excellent tip. We'll be back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. We're going to check in with Talk Media News. Ellen Ratner will be with us in just a moment. Welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. And on the line with us is Ellen Ratner herself. Hey, Ellen, I hope you're well today.
Thank you so much. I am well. But you know what's really interesting is we don't sometimes notice the small little things that the Trump administration is doing. For instance, HUD, which is, of course, our housing, changed its mission statement twice. In its former mission statement, they used the word inclusive. The new mission statement has no inclusive in it. The new mission statement says HUD's mission is to ensure Americans have access to fair, affordable housing and opportunities to achieve self-sufficiency, thereby strengthening our communities and our nation. The former mission statement said that it was to create strong, sustainable, inclusive communities. And then it also used the word inclusive again, talking about utilize housing as a platform, improving quality life, build inclusive and sustainable communities.
Right.
But inclusive is gone.
No, the Republicans, their mission statement is make America white again.
I guess so. That's exactly what we say in our office.
Yeah.
Okay, in terms of North Korea, now I usually do not agree with Frank Gaffney. He's a right winger. He writes all this crazy stuff, etc. But on this one, I think he's right. He's talking about Kim Jong-un, and he's saying that the United States is believing what he's saying. And frankly, I mean, having visited Pearl Harbor and knowing that the Japanese were negotiating, knowing that they were going to attack Pearl Harbor, they were negotiating supposedly peace with the FDR administration.
So you think, and Gaffney is asserting, that Kim's outreach is disingenuous. Is that what you're saying? Ellen? Ellen just froze up. Ellen? Oh, is that strange? I think we've lost Ellen. Yeah. I'm not hearing you on the phone for some reason. Yeah, she just fell right off the phone. Do we have Skype audio? We don't have Skype audio? Okay. Ellen, I'm really sorry. If you can hear me, we can't hear you. You dropped off our phone line, and your Skype audio, you're not sending us audio. So, you know, I guess she's going to call us back. As she's doing this, there's an article that I want to just cue you to. Dana Milbank in today's Washington Post points out that the Republicans have finally found their red line for Donald Trump. You know, what the final, this is it. After disparaging Mexican immigrants, video boasting about sexually assaulting women, alleging that his predecessor wiretapped him, etc. Oh, Ellen's back. We'll continue that in a minute. Ellen, you were saying, I'm sorry.
Well, I was saying, yes, that, you know, I normally don't agree with Frank Gaffney, but I think that the North Koreans are doing what the Japanese really did right before Pearl Harbor, which is they're saying one thing and doing quite another.
I sure hope that's not the case, but
I hope it's not
entirely
the case
possible.
Neither.
Yeah.
Okay, yesterday was a Texas primary, and there was over 1 million people that voted in the Texas primary. That's almost double what voted in 2014. George P. Bush was voted again. He is the nephew of former president and grandson of the former president. But he
isn't he a low energy Jeb's son?
Yes, he is.
Okay, and he endorsed Trump.
Well, Trump.
And Trump endorsed him. Ellen, you know, your phone croaked again. Yeah, it just. I think that, I don't know what's going on. But anyhow, back to Dana Milbank. Dana Milbank is pointing out alleging that you wiretapped him, falsely claiming massive voter fraud, racism directed at a federal judge, the firing of James B. Comey, talk of women bleeding, a payoff to a porn actress over an alleged affair, a defense of white supremacists in Charlottesville, support for Senate candidate Roy Moore despite allegations of child molestation, guilty pleas of Michael Flynn, George Papadopoulos, and Rick Gates, and the indictment of Paul Manafort, the botched travel ban. It just goes on and on, right? Attacks on the FBI, attacks on the judiciary, attempts to fire the attorney general. None of that caused Gary Cohen to be concerned. Anyhow, Ellen is back with us. Ellen, it looks to me like your internet keeps freezing up and that you may have your cell phone turned on to have internet assist.
No, I'm on a hard line, and it's worked for me all day, so
really?
I don't know what's going on.
That's strange.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So I was saying about the Texas primary, and it's very interesting. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee was against Lauren Mosher. She actually won. There's now going to be a runoff between her and another person, and the DCCC doesn't know what to do because they didn't like her because she was a progressive.
Right, and this used to be run by Steve Israel. I don't remember who runs it now. This is separate from the DNC. This is the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. They raise money for members running for the House of Representatives. Do you know who's running that organization?
I don't, actually. Steve Israel used to run it, you're right.
Yeah,
I used to know him quite well. He was from Long Island.
Yep.
Okay. There is now, it's interesting, the Saudi Crown Prince is visiting the United Kingdom. Now, honestly, I'm on the board of Reporters Without Borders in the United States, and they are now objecting. They're saying that Britain is having him there without taking a look at his record on press freedom rights. There are 7 people in jail now.
In Saudi Arabia. I swear, this has got to be an internet problem. It's just, something is freezing up and locking us out. Anyhow, let me finish Dana Milbank here, and we're not going to be able to get back to Ellen. I'm sorry. So the botched travel ban, the guilty pleas of Michael Flynn, George Papadopoulos, Rick Gates, the indictment of Paul Manafort. It's fascinating to see this list that Dana Milbank actually put together over at the Washington Post. I've not seen a really good, talk of African s-hole countries, questions about his mental stability, the response to the hurricane in Puerto Rico, which is still pathetic. All these staff firings and resignations, personal ethics scandals, Kellyanne Conway violating the Hatch Act twice. All that is just fine with the Republican Party. All that was just fine with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. But hey, put some tariffs on steel. Holy cow, the ceiling is falling in. Strange goings on. We'll be back. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.